If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey everybody, Bud Goff from Sublime here, and I'm giving you the story behind the song right here on Consequence. Check it out.
Welcome listeners to the story behind the song. I'm your host Peter Chotti of Deep Cuts Media. Sublime is one of the great bands that broke out massively in the mid-1990s with an entirely different punk ska reggae sound. The band hailed from SoCal's skateboard culture and proudly waved its Long Beach banner. Its breakthrough album was 1997's self-titled Sublime, a now classic multi-platinum album that spawned timeless tracks Santeria, What I Got, and Wrong Way, among others. No filler in the bunch. The great tragedy is that Sublime's frontman Bradley Nowell never saw any of it. He tragically died 2 months before the album's release, leaving his close friends and bandmates, drummer Bud Gaw and Eric Wilson, broken and unable to ever fully enjoy their success and share their great music live. But here we are now, decades later, and Sublime is reborn, releasing new music and touring behind frontman Jacob Nowell, Bradley Nowell's own son. In this episode, I asked drummer Bud Gaw about all of it and the story behind the band's great track, Wrong Way. You'll love this interview. Bud is exactly what you would expect him to be. Still mourning the death of his great bandmate, to be sure, but also celebrating Bradley Nowell's and Sublime's legacy and new authentic direction under Bradley's son, Jacob. Bud's excitement and energy are palpable. So take a listen as we dive deep into the story behind the Sublime's iconic song, Wrong Way, with drummer and songwriter, Bud Gaw.
Bud, it's great to see you, and I see you're in Southern California. It's a sunny day.
It is a sunny day here. This beautiful weather we're having.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's awesome. And, you know, Bud, drummer of the great band Sublime, like I said, legendary. I followed you guys from the very beginning. I've been in Southern California, K-Rock from, you know, back in the day. And I can visualize it right now, driving up the Big Bear and listening to Sublime. And just amazing music. And the really cool thing is that the legend continues. You guys are in the studio, rumor has it, and you have new music coming out.
We are in the studio right now. Yes.
Give me whatever clues you can about the album or the music, when it's going to come out, because that's pretty exciting news.
We've been moving like at breakneck speed right now. Things are really coming together quite fast. We're excited about that. We have an idea for our first single, and we're getting ready to release that here coming up shortly. Don't have an exact date for it yet, but if you come to our shows, chances are you might get to see us play it live. So we got quite a number of songs, traditional Sublime fashion. We don't like to waste space on that little cassette tape, you know?
Yeah,
there's
right.
like a lot of tape all wound up in there, and we want to use it all because it's better for the planet that way.
Yes, exactly. By the way, why do you say that? Because I'm going to be seeing you at Bottle Rock.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, so I'm excited about that. And I saw you last year at Coachella, which was so much fun to see you guys and to see Bradley's son, who's now fronting the band. And how is that? How is it working with Jacob?
You know, it's a real treat. It truly is a gift, you know. I mean, watching our nephew grow up, you know, musically, spiritually, you know, in every way, it's just a real treat to be able to be a part of that. Jake's really kicking butt. You know, he's got his castle thing going, and the record label Sunburnt here, and him and Zane are just really kicking butt out there. But like I said, it truly is a gift. You know, I mean, it's just the bonds that we have right now. It's so reminiscent of back in the early days. You know, when we were all just a bunch of, you know, freaks just running around doing whatever the hell we wanted to do. You know, so it's kind of like that again.
That's got to be so cool. Good for you. And yeah. Bud, you're one of a great line of drummers who have been featured on my podcast. I've had Nick Mason of Pink Floyd, which was very cool. Stuart Copeland from The Police, and
I played golf with him once.
Oh, did you really? How was that like? Who's the better golfer?
Definitely him. I kind of like play hide and seek, you know.
Yeah,
hit the ball, got to go find it.
Yeah, I hear you. My friends don't want to play golf with me, so yeah, I've kind of put that aside. But listen, today we're going to dig into Wrong Way, and you have so many great songs. You know, Santeria, What I Got, and the list is on, which is pretty amazing because you had studio albums, and so that's why, like, this is going to be so special to have a new album come out. But before we dig into the song itself, Wrong Way, from your third album, which was the album that was released in 1997, and it was released tragically after Bradley passed away. And we'll talk about that a little bit. But first, I want to understand your musical journey, Bud, and how you and the band came together, how that formation was down in the Long Beach scene in Southern California.
Well, it was really easy, actually. I came from a broken home and would live with one parent for a year and another parent for a year. My dad moved into a house in Long Beach, in Belmont Shore, and it was right across the alley from Eric. And so I met Eric when I was like 11 years old, and we just instantly became friends. His dad is a jazz musician. Playing drums, did his tour of duty in World War II with the USO band. So he was out there, a Coast Guard band, playing USO shows. So he's out there with like Bob Hope and Betty Grable entertaining the soldiers, you know. And he always told me, he's like, musician, it's a wonderful life. He's like, I never had to pick up a rifle except for in basic training, you know, did my whole tour playing shows, you know, it's a great life. And, you know, he put the bug in my head, you know, from a young age. That's kind of a secret that most people don't know about the band is Eric and I were both trained by the same jazz musician. So, you know, that's where we kind of get that lock, you know.
And your individual style, because your style is, you know, your style is your own.
Yeah,
really make it. Yeah, it's really such integral to the Sublime sound. So you guys had that kind of training, and then how did the rest happen where you met Bradley and you came together and formed the band?
So it's kind of Eric's fault in that sense, because
it's a good fault. Like...
Every other year, you know, I was taken off and living with my mom. So Eric and I would have a band while I was there at my dad's house. And then when I would leave, he would find another drummer or another group of guys to jam with. And then when I would come back, we would either start up our old band again or jam with these new guys. And just so happened that one of those new guys turned out to be Brad. And that's how I met Brad. Eric had met him through, you know, just friends in Long Beach and stuff like that. So that's how we all came together.
And how long did it take when you first got together and you first met Bradley? Because you and Eric have known each other for a long time. But how long did it take before you actually said, okay, guys, we're doing a band?
So it was crazy. So we jammed with Brad one time, and he was still in school up at UC Santa Cruz. And so he came back for spring break, I think, had like a week or two off. And we went into his dad's garage and just started playing music. And Brad showed us Date Rape. He had wrote that out at UC Santa Cruz. And that was one of the first songs we worked on. But we had arranged and rewrote like five or six songs that week. It was like one song every day that we were producing. And you know, at that point, it was just like, yeah, this is going to be, when are you coming back from school? Summer can't get here quick enough, you know?
Yeah, right,
like,
right.
You should just quit.
Yeah, exactly. Did he quit?
He eventually did, yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah. He did.
He moved from Santa Cruz and changed to Long Beach, to Cal State Long Beach. So there was some, you know, switching of credits and stuff from a UC to a CSU. Don't know exactly all the politics involved in that, but there was something some classes didn't transfer over so well. But we ended up kidnapping him.
Yeah. It didn't matter whether they transferred, because it sounds like that you guys started jamming. You felt the magic right away. And if you already had Date Rape and then you were writing a song a day, essentially, you guys already knew you had something special. It sounds
yeah.
like.
Yes.
That's pretty cool. Like, that's really cool. And so it was at that time that you kind of said to each other, okay, let's really do this together. Is that kind of how it happened? Was there like
that's how it was. We always knew, like, from the jump, it was like, we're the world's greatest band. And now we just have to convince everybody else of that.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I think that's so cool. And then how did you guys come up with the name?
So that was... We had like tossed around a bunch. We're sitting there drinking beers, you know, smoking and joking, having a good time, you know, throwing names out, and nothing was really sticking, you know, all the usual suspects. And then Brad's girlfriend at the time, she came over with like a thesaurus and a dictionary and was like flipping through it. And she was like, what about this one? It was like, wait a minute, what? That's kind of cool. What does that mean? You know?
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, that actually fits.
And for you guys listening out there or watching out there, remember, this was pre-internet. So it's not like you could just go, you know,
Google it.
No, you couldn't ChatGPT it, right? You couldn't say, give me 50 songs.
Yeah.
That's wild. Because it's before we get into the song, just because it's so much of your lore, having Lou Dog, Bradley's dog Lou, was he already in the scene at that time, like for the very beginning with you guys? Because for everybody out there who if you listen to the songs, you'll hear Lou Dog, like Lou Dog in the van. You know, that's one of the lyrics, but he was wandering on stage, from what I understand, like back in the day.
Yeah, so he came on after 40 Ounce, right about Robin the Hood time. He was with a friend of ours. He had he adopted this dog, and he wasn't too kind to Lou. And so Brad, instead of beating this guy up, Brad just stole his dog. So
that's awesome.
He did the right thing.
I understand there's a couple stories from the Warp Tour, which was one of the first tours you were on, right?
Lou just, he loves skaters. He just loves them. He loves the way they taste. He loves to scare them. He really loves to bite them.
That's what I
think it's the wheels. He doesn't like the way that they go round and round.
what was your big break as a band? You know, you guys are young guys. You have your growing following, like a hardcore, and it's very organic, right? It's a very organic growth where you guys are just playing local bars and all that kind of stuff. So what was it that, if there was a moment that kind of changed things?
It was really hard back then for us to get gigs in LA, especially. We were doing this thing solo, you know, we were the only band doing this kind of music. And so promoters would be like, how the hell do I put these guys on a lineup? You know, they're punk rock, but they're not, you know, hair metal, you know, how do we fit them in? You know, and the scene in Hollywood was way different back then than what we were doing. So we just decided we got a Maximum Rock and Roll, Book Your Own Effing Life, and had a list of promoters and club owners, and we just started calling and weren't really getting any luck, you know. And then I think it was Miguel that had the idea. He was like, you know, we need our own label. And so all of a sudden we started putting Skunk Records on all the discs that we were stamping out and cassettes. And so then when he's calling, he's like, yeah, yo, this is Miguel with Skunk Records. Da, 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 yeah. So we've got one of our bands coming through town. You know, I'm sure you heard of them, Sublime, Skunk Recording Artists, you know. And the guys were like, oh, yeah, yeah, no. Oh, yeah, Far Out, for sure, for sure. Okay, we can do this, you know. And so that kind of kicked the door open a little bit. And we booked a tour, you know, across the South. We booked a tour up the West Coast. And I specifically remember we were in Portland. And Migs was advancing the shows for Vancouver because we were going up to BC. And he's like, dude, the guy ain't calling me back. He's like, keep on him, dude. He's probably just busy. Just keep on him. And never heard anything back. You know, we had a couple of shows booked. We're going to go up to Seattle, then to Vancouver, play a couple shows up there, and then work our way back down. And at this point, we're barely making enough gas money to keep the van going from show to show. You know, right. We're crashing on people's floors, stealing food out of the refrigerators just to stay somewhat healthy, you know, and saving a buck here and there. Well, the promoter, he got busted for underage drinking. We got up to Vancouver and there was like yellow tape across the door and, you know, the sign from the alcohol board saying, this establishment's done. So we're like, fuck, what do we do? We got like a week before we have return shows. We're gonna starve up here. We're stuck in Seattle now, you know? And we met this guy, Wardo, and he was great. He ended up becoming my drum tech for a while, but Wardo was like, all right, well, after parties, Club Virginia, we're gonna play over there. And he just like kind of took over and started making backyard parties up in Everett and the surrounding areas around Seattle, you know, and we'd just play somebody's house party that summer, you know, make a few bucks, get some beer to drink, you know, and we kind of made a home base out of this guy's pad up in Everett. And so that's why we have such a thick following up in Seattle. So the Seattle to San Diego thing, the West Coast was just locked in. That was kind of like our launching pad, I'd have to say.
Yeah, that's very cool. And was there anything that kind of triggered it where you went from that, what you were talking about, where you're playing backyards and you're playing some bars? And by the way, I love that story where you had your buddy who was Skunk Records. And, you know, that's so rock and roll, man. Like, you know, you make stuff happen in just this kind of creative way. But
yeah,
from going to those, yeah, for those kind of little gigs to and playing for beer and all that, was it just a slow growth to getting it on K-Rock and then kind of blowing it wide open? Or what, did somebody hear you and embrace it and then like start spinning your music on K-Rock? Which, by the way, for those of you who are listening, K-Rock was like the influential indie radio station in Los Angeles.
Still is. And you know, we love K-Rock. They've been so nice to us. We just have a lot of fun with those guys. Back in the days, we would do like Love Line and things like that, you know, when they had really cool shows. like that. We would go up there, but we had sent like CDs and cassettes to Jed the Fish and Rodney on the Rock, you know, and trying to get like on one of the local Licks kind of shows. And you know, I think Jed played us one time, you know, it was like, hey, here, check out this band from Long Beach, you know, but we never got any steady rotation until after the Warp Tour. Kevin Lyman, he saw us, he was like, yeah, these guys are great, you know, and talked Paul Toy into you know, putting us on the Warp Tour, the very first Vans Warp Tour. And right around then we were signing our first major record deal with Gasoline Alley. It was a Universal indie label.
Yep.
It was like magic. As soon as the ink dried on the contract, we were in regular rotation on K-Rock. But I'm sure there's probably a backstory to that, right? It's not really payola. It wasn't because it was a record label owned by Universal that put us on the radio.
I love that. For those of you who are listening, you got to start watching this because that was a classic moment too from Bud in front of the screen. That was great. Well, look, big label, but the music was, as you were saying, like this is, it was a very different sound at that time, for sure. That was hitting the airwaves. And you mentioned a couple of names again. I just want to point it out for people out there, like Kevin Lyman. I think he was the program manager over at K-Rock. And Paul Tolette, he ultimately started Coachella, among other things. So like these are legendary names, and they got behind you because they heard the sound and they loved the song. They knew there was something there.
Yeah. Kevin, he was a promoter from way back in Golden Voice, you know, early days, him and Paul, and then he started the Warp Tour and put us on, and then regretted it halfway through.
Yeah. I can only imagine, like, the guys who were up in Everett and in the backyard listening to you guys and then seeing what ultimately happened and how your music broke out and continues. So let's get into The Wrong Way. So first of all, of all the different songs, because you have so many classic songs, and Wrong Way is a great one, I'm curious why that was the song that you wanted to dig into.
You know, it doesn't really get a lot of play. Everybody, you know, hears and talks about, you know, Santa Rhea or What I Got, you know, those are like the more common popular, or Date Rape, you know, popular topics anyways. But Wrong Way really was a cool song, and it had a cool start, you know. I mean, we didn't have anything, and we're just like sitting around drinking. We're in Austin, Texas, or just outside at Pedernales at Willie Nelson's studios there. And it was a really bitchin' setup. It was like an old golf club. And so he took the golf club and turned that into the studio. So clubhouse was overlooking Lake Travis, and it was a real awesome setup, just like kind of out in the middle of this bitchin' golf course, and had a bunch of houses around there. And I guess the whole Willie Nelson touring family kind of lived out there.
Yeah.
And so it was a really neat, you know, isolation, kind of our first like real big time studio thing. And we're out there, what the hell do we got to do? You know? And so we're sitting around drinking beer, talking about this next song idea. And Brad is like, I got this idea. I want to do something. But the idea is you're doing things the wrong way, you know. So we're sitting there spitballing, throwing ideas back and forth, just yucking it up, having a good time, you know. And you know, wake up the next morning with the hangover and trot down to the studio and get in there and cut Wrong Way, you know. And it's like holy crap, like, this is all the shit we were talking about last night.
That's funny. So yeah. Do you remember the first, kernel of the song? Was it the lyric first, or was it did you already have something going on the music side, and then you found some of those lyrics based on your beer drinking and hanging out that you kind of put in?
So we kind of had like a chord progression and a ska beat for the idea that we wanted to do. We just didn't have the lyrics and the melody yet. And then after that night, you know, Brad was a real magician. You know, he would, all of our songs were, you know, about, you know, us. It was all about us or our cast of characters and our close friendship, you know, Opie and Eno and all these, you know, Sancho and all these people, you know. It was our group, Jack Manis. And so all the songs, you know, Brad would put them lyrically and poetically into these songs like it was happening to him or through him. Well, it was, because it was all of us and the things that we would do, you know. And, you know, threw a bottle at the bouncer, didn't think he was cool. Pissing someone's drink and threw a bike into the pool. You know, all that stuff happened. Not on the same night, usually, but all these things happened. And Brad just had a way with, you know, putting pen to paper and making this stuff come to life, you know. And so he went to bed that night, had a melody in his head, got up the next morning. He's still scribbling down, you know, as we're getting ready to cut this track. And he's like, all right, here it is. You know? And so then we get to that part, you know? So we track it, we do the basic tracks, you know? And it was like two takes, bam, right on. And Paul Leary, guitar player for the Butthole Surfers, he was our engineer, or our producer. Stuart was the engineer, but Paul was the producer. And he was like, that first take, man, you guys killed it on that one. That's the one. And so then we're thinking, oh, well, we need a horn for this. And Paul was like, I got the guy. There's this guy in town. He is just a greasy horn player. This guy, he's so rude. You know, you're going to dig him. You know, he just plays the hell out of the horn. Total virtuoso, like street musician, just ripping it up. You know, one of those guys who can just sit there and just play for days. So John Blondell, we get him down to the studio, and he was kind of like this anti-capitalist, you know, I'm just a, you know, starving artist, kind of bohemian dude. And, you know, he comes in and just fucking killed it, right? And so Paul's like, he's like, okay, well, here, you know, we need your social security number. We're going to have you sign off on this all legitimate legal stuff. And he's like, yeah. Oh man, I don't know about that. And Paul's like, you got to take something. He's like, I like that watch. That watch is pretty cool. So Paul's like, yeah, man, here you go. Okay, watch. You know,
that is.
Man, finally, classic. He came around, like, you know, a year or so later. Universal was like, we can't have this guy just getting paid to watch. It's got to be legit, you know. So, track him down. You know?
Yeah, that's classic, man. So
yeah,
I mean, like, so many things there. So that song, Wrong Way, you only did two takes of it.
Yeah,
that's crazy. That's crazy, and it sounds like you had never played with the trombone player before. You just said bring in a horn, and then this happened, and so. You had a jazz background, and like that comes into play in that kind of stuff. If you're doing two takes on a song like this and you bring in another artist who you haven't really played with before and you're able to be that tight, like how does that even happen? Because I can't even imagine that.
Well, you know, this is like the first type of digital media when we were recording back then. It was still 2-inch tape, but it was digital tape. But you still, I mean, you had to play it. You know, it wasn't like Pro Tools where you're just like, okay, well, we can cut that there and just loop it over. You know, you have to use a razor blade, slice tape.
Yeah.
You know, so it was, you know, you had to play your part.
Yeah. I mean, that's wild. And it's kind of interesting that you all felt that we got to bring a horn in here, because the horn is also just such a signature part of that song.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. I love that story of the watch. That's, again, that's so classic Sublime. What's so beautiful about your music is that it's so authentic to the life. And like you mentioned, I had no idea, and I'm a big Sublime fan. I had no idea in that song that when you say, when he sings Sancho, you know, what that was. And now I know, now we all know that was just one of the buddies that you guys hung out with.
Sancho's like a, you know, a character too. So also in the song, we're talking about the guy who comes in and steals your chick while you're doing time, you know.
Yeah.
You're all there holed up in the joint and shit. Sancho comes and starts talking to your lady. Oh, let me help you with your groceries.
Yeah. And so it sounds like your process was kind of what you were talking about, where you guys, your writing process, like it, you hung out and ideas came to you and you'd be jamming. And then he'd have some lyrics and he was really good at like the lyrics and, but it was a lot of jamming and the tunes kind of came up from that, right? Together. Like you guys collectively just knew each other and knew how to play with each other. And right. So it was joyful.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of the stuff we would write ideas on the stage, you know, just jamming out, improvising. And, you know, so early on we learned it's cheaper just to press play and record whenever we're performing, because you know you lose those magical moments when you don't. So
yeah
you know, we kind of, you know, followed Grateful Dead a little bit, loved their open taping policy, thought, hey, this is perfect, you know, anybody who has a good quality, you know, tape can you know, help us out here and bring some things to life. That's kind of how we did the Memories CD live at the Trestle Tavern, or $5 at the door. I forget what we eventually ended up calling it. But that was a board tape from a show up in Everett, actually in Washington. So
that's classic.
Yeah.
So the songs are in the can, you know, you've recorded them for album number 3. And when you had it, how did you feel about it? Did you know there was something special there?
Walking on the edge of the earth. I mean, it was a cliffhanger. We could not wait for this album to come out. You know, I had a 75 K5 Blazer, four-wheel drive truck, you know, the whole roof comes off, big old kicker speakers and amp in it, and cruise up and down 2nd Street and Belmont Shores and Main Street and PCH and Huntington and just blasting our music, you know. And people were like, "Whoa, what's that? That's right on, yeah." You know?
Yeah.
And we could not wait. We knew this is like dynamite, man. This shit's dangerous. Dangerously delicious. So yeah, we could not wait to share it. It's really, really exciting.
And so then the tragedy happens before you have a chance to really share it and release the album. And how do you go from what you were just talking about, where you're driving around and it's, you got something, you know, is just lightning in a bottle, to that happening and what you do, because the album, so just give us a little bit of just your mindset at the time and how you even go about putting one foot forward after what happened.
Yeah, we are all devastated. I mean, you know, here we are on this magic carpet ride. We're just sailing, you know, and we're 31,000 feet and somebody rips the carpet out from underneath us. You know, it was just a free fall, you know, not a soft landing. I can tell you that, you know, it was devastating to all of us, you know, emotionally, physically, every which way, you know, and, We're all young, you know, pre-30s, never really prepared ourselves for it. We always kind of thought, you know, in the back of our mind, this is probably going to happen someday. But, you know, you never prepare yourself for the reality of it, the finality of it.
Yeah.
And so a lot of grieving the wrong way. But you know, we got hit up immediately by the record label. They were like, okay, we've got to find a replacement for Brad. Da, 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 da. And Eric and I were like, whoa, hey, this ain't happening. And So we just took our time on it. You know, we waited an extra month to release the album, change the title of the album, and some of the artwork got moved around, and then released it, you know, on a delayed schedule. And you know, K-Rock once again was very integral in helping us with this release, you know, putting it out posthumously, and you know, I mean, it just went like gangbusters, you know. I mean, everybody was like, oh my God, these songs are awesome. You know, I mean, I haven't found an album out there that has so many cool songs, you know, back to back. Like, you can listen to it all the way through. There's not one stinker on the album. And, you know, it's been a long time. So Eric and I, we waited a couple of years. You know, we had to deal with the record label and put their wants and desires to bed. We ended up just reaching out to our friends and street family, you know, Opie and Marshall Goodman, Miguel, Jack Manis, you know, and we put together the Long Beach Dub All-Stars. And that was in 98. So Brad passed in 96. 2 years later, we're going out and we're playing, you know, songs that are similar. We decided to play a couple of Sublime songs in our live set that we never got to play live for people before, to just kind of pay homage to the Sublime sound and keep the love going. And yeah, we wrote two albums with that, you know, and it wasn't exactly the same, you know. I mean, there was a lot of love from our brothers, and you know, the music is great, and the Dub All Stars got a great thing going still today, you know, but it wasn't Sublime. And you know, I've been searching, Eric and I have both been searching for that feeling, you know, forever. And you know, I gotta say, I really truly haven't had that true excitement that we had, you know, leaving the studio on that self-titled album. That has been a feeling that was like, this is obviously one of those once in a lifetime things. Well, you know, don't say never, because it's happening again. Like, I am so excited. Can't wait for everybody to hear these new songs that we got. It's going to be, I think everybody's going to be really, really happy with what we're putting together here.
That's awesome.
The cook's in the kitchen. He's going to eat it all before it comes out to the table.
Well, Bud, first of all, thanks for sharing all that. That's very, very cool. So, Bud, you were talking about the magic. Was the process for writing these songs and recording these songs different or similar to the way it was when you were doing the Sublime songs with Bradley?
A little bit of both, actually. So I got down here a couple months back and had some time in between shows. So Jacob and I went into the studio and he kind of showed me a couple ideas that he had, and I laid down some drum tracks. And then he kind of built off of that, you know, and then came back to us with a couple more little polished demos. And so Eric and I get together now in the studio with Jake. And so we start going through some of these ideas. And so Jacob's definitely has, you know, his dad just, you know, flowing through his veins. And so his writing style and techniques are very similar. You know, he's taking reality and putting it to paper and pen. And so, you know, you get that same vibe. And then Eric and I get into the studio and start, you know, putting the finishing touches on things, you know, a little rearrangement here. You know, let's put this part there, make this part longer, whatever it is, you know. But we're you know, doing our little tweaks on the arrangements and stuff. So You know, it's got to have that signature sound. So it's very, very kind of similar in that sense where we're creating it like on the spot. And then also with Jake coming in with some other ideas, you know, and then us all working it out. So very similar and very different at the same time.
It's got to be a trip playing with Jacob. It's got to be. It's got to be like a wild thing. You said that he's, you know, they've got a similar, he and his dad have such a, like a similar vibe, right? A similar sensibility to them.
Yes. Yes. So he's got, you know, he's definitely got some of his dad's mannerisms, you know, inflections in his voice and stuff. Sometimes it's just like, you close your eyes and it's like, man, sounds so much like Brad. And then, you know, so Brad had this really, really sweet voice, really polished kind of sound early on. And Jacob's voice kind of reminds me of a younger Brad. And, you know, over time, you know, whether it be, you know, performing on stage or, you know, cigarettes and alcohol, Brad develops more of a guttural kind of gravelly voice. And, you know, he uses that to kind of put his feelings into, you know, so you feel the meaning behind the lyrics, you know, and so Jake's like starting to get that part too, you know, and it's just, like I said, it's really cool, like watching him develop as an artist and, you know, grow up as a man and stuff, you know, I mean, it's like, you know, I don't think I ever grew up.
Yeah.
So it's like, this is all just a mystery to me. It's like, how do you do this stuff? You know, you got to add some water, a little bit of sunlight.
Well, it's got to be fun to go on stage together. And like Coachella was so magical. Like that was so cool to see. And what's great about Sublime's music is that it's really timeless. You know, there's sometimes you have eras in music in rock and roll that sound, it's almost like nostalgic going back because the sound was for that time. And the thing about Sublime's music is that it is kind of timeless, like for all these eras that we're talking about. And so like that album is now almost 30 years old, which is insane, but you still see all the time, young kids are wearing Sublime t-shirts even before like learning that there's going to be new music coming out, you know? and you guys, like, it's gotta be wild, bud, wherever you go, you see Sublime t-shirts. Wow, that merch is everywhere.
Yeah. It is. And the music is too, you know, you can be stopped to go pump your gas at a gas station and it's right there on the gas, you know, at the gas station coming out of the speakers or, you know, when you're shopping at Target or wherever you're shopping, you know.
Yeah. What a trip. Okay. So I want to get into a couple rapid fire questions for you. And what, big or small, what is your, is there a particular memory to you in from a musical experience standpoint that like sticks out in your mind? Like that was really special. Like you were catching yourself and go, wow, man, like that's amazing. Is there anything that sticks out in that kind of way for you?
Well, definitely new and old. You know, you brought up Coachella and, you know, that was like our first real show with Jacob. You know, we did the benefit show for HR in December the year before, and then we come out to do Coachella. And, you know, Eric and I are used to playing for bigger crowds and stuff. You know, we've been around the block a few times. And so for us, it's like second nature, you know, the more people, the more emotion, you know. And so it's like we dive right in and feed off of that shit. And, you know, it was so much fun to watch Jake and see his reaction to it. You know, I was like, oh man, is he going to crumble? You know, is this going to be too much for him?
It's a lot.
And he dove in, you know, head first and just started swimming, you know, he was just riding the wave. And like I said, it's a lot of emotion and we always play off the crowd. So, you know, it was really, really cool. That was one of these really, really good feelings. And then like, first Warped Tour, we were up in North Tonawanda, New York, up by Buffalo, and it had rained the night before, so this field that we were playing in was just muddy, you know. So it was a big muddy mosh pit, and people are running around, and somebody threw like a dirt clod, mud ball, grassy mud ball up on stage, and Eric like kicked it off of the stage, and it hit somebody in the head. And so they picked up mud and started throwing it at the band, and mud's just flying everywhere. And it was like all over Brad. It was all over my drums. It stuck onto Eric's bass. And it's like, he couldn't even play guitar anymore because it was just deadening the strings and stuff like that. You know, it's like, there's so many like really cool things. It was like, yeah, this is unforgettable. You never forget that. You can't get that in real life.
No, that. Again, that is so sublime because it sounds like you enjoyed it. That it, like you guys embraced it on stage where that was happening.
Yeah. Virtually, yeah. Some people might get mad, you know. They, like, I spent so much money on this damn guitar. You know? It's like, oh, well.
So many
for our tech.
Exactly. And then, Bud, what do you listen? Like, what do you listen to? What's on your playlist these days?
Oh, man. I have a very eclectic taste, you know. I'm all over the place. I've been really digging the Skints, but I listen to like all kinds of stuff, you know. Old punk rock, dub, you know. Listen to a lot of Mad Scientist, Mad Professor, Dub Scientist, just good music.
Yeah. Well, very cool, man. Listen, I'm really looking forward to seeing you later this year on tour, at least at Bottle Rock, because I'm definitely going to Bottle Rock. And, you know, that's going to be exciting. That's such a great place to go to hear music too. And can't wait for the new music that comes out. What I understand, the first single is going to be coming out in the early summer sometime, and then the album after that. So that's soon.
That's the plan.
Okay.
That's the plan. We want to have something for summertime ready to go to serenade everybody through these hot days. So.
Well, Sublime is summertime. Whether it's summertime or not, Sublime is summertime.
Yep. Get your toes in the sand and beers in your hand, because we're coming.
I love it. I love it, man. Bud Gaw, thank you so much for joining us from the great band Sublime. Thanks for joining the Story Behind the Song.
Thank you.
That was Bud Gaw of the great punk ska band Sublime, sharing his story behind the band's iconic track Wrong Way from its classic 1997 self-titled album. Check out the band's first new music in decades and catch them on tour all summer and fall. I'm your host, Peter Chatty of Deep Cuts Media. You can find me at deepcutsmedia.com. Check out all the cool things we do. And if you like my show, please rate it, follow it, and share it with your friends, family, and other music fans like you. New and classic episodes come to you every Monday morning. And make sure to check out all the cool The Story Behind the Song merch, including the poster and puzzle I have in my studio in the Consequence merch store at shop.consequence.net. Be sure to click on the new release tab and follow the Consequence Podcast Network to keep up to date with all our series at consequence.net/consequence-podcast-network. And as always, thanks for listening to The Story Behind the Song.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I've gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.